Good morning. It's 8:16. I'm Sarah Gibson, and in the studio with me this morning is Tim Troll. He's the executive director of the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust. He's also a painter and a local historian. Welcome to the studio this morning, Tim.
Well, thank you very much.
And let's get started with, you're actually here almost exactly 28 years ago, so we're going to get to that at some point, but let's just get started with why you're here now in 2017. There's some paintings of yours on display, and can you tell us about those?
Yeah, I have three paintings on display over the National Park Visitor Center, and so I'm here to talk about those, and I timed my coming here to be here for the celebrations of Sitka because I've never been to it, and it's one of those things that every Alaskan should experience at least once in their life, I figured, so I definitely wanted to come down for the last few days. And I can say it was everything and more than I expected. It was just a lot of fun and a good time and a great celebration.
And so tonight you're going to be speaking at the Park Services Visitor Center about three paintings you have in the Voices of Change exhibit. Can you tell us about those?
Well, the three paintings, I had proposed initially just doing a painting of Reverend Sheldon Jackson. And actually I'd painted portraits of him before related to another project. But I actually turned it into three paintings because sometimes as a painter you never know where things are going. And it just seemed to me that if you were telling the story of Sheldon Jackson, you couldn't also ignore the story of St. Innocent, Jan van Eemenhof. In fact, it's a story that kind of plays out right on Lincoln Avenue here in Sitka. And then the third painting actually wound up of a good friend of mine who's now passed on. Father Rene Astrick, who was a Jesuit priest in the Lower Yukon for more than 50 years. And so I made three paintings instead of the one.
And can you talk about Sheldon Jackson? He is known here because of the Sheldon Jackson campus, being an educator, but you know him largely as having collected a lot of both artwork, ceremonial objects, and daily objects throughout Alaska, from Alaska Native communities, and that's why you first came here, right?
That's why I first came here, and of course that's not what Sheldon Jackson is obviously known for and written about in the history of Alaska. But I used to live out on the Lower Yukon River back in the 1980s and became involved with the Yupik communities out there and had learned that there was a marvelous collection of Yupik material here in Sitka that was Yupik, collected by Jackson or agents working for Jackson in the 1880s. And so I had this maybe somewhat outlandish idea back then, why don't we go borrow some of that stuff and take it out to our little village and show people, and maybe people can remember some of this stuff from their, you know, that they heard when they were growing up or have even seen it. So that's how I first encountered Sheldon Jackson, and that's basically, I mean, it's been that collection that has interested me the most. Mm-hmm.
And so you came here, you came to Sitka 28 years ago, basically to fetch more than 100 items for a festival in your village. So you came here and you had three Yupik elders with you. Can you tell us about that visit?
Yes. Well, first of all, we wanted to do this exhibit, and it was not anything that had been ever done before. We were naive about museums. We contacted the museum. Peter Corey ran the museum at that time. Initially said, you know, this is really impossible. We can't send this stuff out.
Why was it impossible?
Well, because it's obviously, it's a treasure. I mean, these are items that aren't created anymore, and they need to be preserved. So any museum curator is going to be very curious before lending stuff to make sure that there's lots of security and things in place. Well, we had none of that. We're a village, a small village on the Lower Yukon. And so initially it didn't look like it was going to happen. But then Peter called back and he said, you know, we think it's a great idea, and we'll let this happen if you're willing to pay for the curator, actually from Sitka, Peter, to come out and be a part and be with the stuff. So that way we could avoid insurance and all of those things. And so the door opened. We got a small grant. Went to Gary Holthouse at the Humanities Forum and said, hey, Gary, what do you think of this idea? Oh, here's, yeah. So we brought three elders from the Lower Yukon down to Sitka.
What was it like when they started going through those drawers and seeing all of those objects?
Well, initially, when we went to the museum, they obviously went through the display area, and they picked out the material that was Yupik right off the hand. But they were disappointed. They said, is this all there is? And then Peter came up and said, no, we're going to go down into the back rooms. And then we started opening the drawers, and it was pretty exciting because particularly the two older gentlemen who were with us, they grew up using a lot of this material or seeing their parents and grandparents use it. And when it came to the artistic objects, the really artistic objects like the masks, they were even familiar or heard stories about the makers and the shamans who were behind those masks.
Yeah, and you were telling me earlier this morning that the three of you all had never been to Sitka before, but there was one Yupik elder who had been here. In the 1950s, there was a TB sanitarium here in Sitka, and he had come here to be in that in the 1950s, and this was his second
yes,
visit.
Yes, I know, his second time watched the event. He's not with us anymore, but he was the only one, and he didn't recognize anything. Mm. But we also enjoyed Sitka. It was the farthest these gentlemen had really gone.
And what was it like when you brought those objects back to where they had first been?
Well, there was certainly lots of things that happened along the way, but when we brought them back, we also, the day before, we had a big dance festival. This was the idea, was we would bring them back, and we had several hundred people we were flying in for a big dance festival. But the day before, we had elders come in from the surrounding villages to look at them, decide how they should be displayed. And it was a very dramatic time opening these cases and bringing out the objects. And the information just started flowing. And unfortunately, we didn't have anybody there who could really translate and record a lot of this. It was all recorded by KYUK TV in Bethel.
Yeah.
But it was obvious that the understanding of what these things were used for had not been lost, that it was a lot of it was still there, and that it would be of value to the museums themselves to understand the context in which these things were created and used.
Yeah, and that's certainly something people maybe are more used to now, going to Sheldon Jackson, there being plaques that explain at least some of the context of objects. But you were saying that in 1989, when you came here, this was really the beginning of elders being invited into the collections and often at least temporarily repatriating objects back to where they had originally been taken, and that process is something that happens a lot more with museums these days. Can you sort of talk about the significance of that first time when people came into the Sheldon Jackson Museum and collections, and how things have evolved since then?
Well, I'm not a museum person, and I can't say at the time that we were even thinking about what would happen. This was just what we thought was a cool idea. We should do it and see what's there. It did lead, and the same people were all involved, a couple of years later, to a major exhibit of Yupik material from museums all around the world called Agayuli Ochput, Our Way of Making Prayer. That exhibit had 200 and some items, did go to rural parts, and then all around the United States. That exhibit probably is what really opened the door, one, to museums learning that there are great value to having elders come into their collections, and elders now and other cultures beginning to mine museums. Because a lot of this was happening in the 1880s, and there was a fear that museums and people needed to be collecting this stuff because the native cultures were going to lose it. And so they did. And so there are great collections of Yupik material, but from other Alaskan cultures as well, in many of the great museums around the world.
So that was it ended up being 105 items that went there, and then most of them came back to the Sheldon Jackson.
Oh, yeah, they're all still there. Yeah. They were there for 3 days.
Yeah. We've been talking to Tim Troll, and I should say that your brother is the very famous Ray Troll. And in fact, for the listeners out there, Tim is wearing an amazing sweatshirt that his brother made. It's the Bristol Bay Fishermen's Association.
No. We just call it Bristol Bay Fishermen pulling the nets since 1884.
It's a very good archival sweatshirt that he came into the studio. And he was, in fact, in the studio almost exactly 28 years ago with three Yupik elders. And somewhere we have those archives, I think, probably of that interview.
That'd be great to hear.
But thanks for coming back to Sitka. Tim Troll will be speaking this evening at 7 p.m. at the Park Services Visitor Center to talk about his paintings, which are part of the Voices of Change exhibit. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, I hope everybody can come. Thank you.
Yeah.